Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast again, everybody. This is your host, Jason Staples, and it has been a while since our last episode. Been pretty busy with some other things, trying to get some players placed, some of my players placed, and getting a few other things out of the way. So my apologies for not having more out sooner. Obviously, I'd have loved to have had a couple podcasts surrounding the Florida game. I did get a tweet in right before that game mentioning that I couldn't get a podcast episode up, but my pregame prediction was that Florida State would win 31-13, which, as it turned out, hit it right on the button. So if nothing else this season was a good thing, I don't think any Florida State fan is going to complain about yet another state title. State champs yet again for Florida State. And salvaging, in many respects, what could be salvaged from an overall disappointing year. And even more enjoyable about that from the Florida State side is that Florida is really in trouble. I mean, it was pretty clear in that game. Florida is in trouble for the near future. I mean, Florida State is in position at this point to dominate the state for at least four more years, given the talent on those two teams, who's about to be leaving. Florida is projected to have as many as four first round picks off of that defense, several of whom are leaving early, and they're not replacing those guys with Muschamp level defensive recruits. This is a good reason why Jeff Collins just took the Temple job. Best to get out before the talent dips on that defense. And when the talent dips on that defense, the Florida offense doesn't have Danny Werfel and Jaquez Green and those guys walking through that door anytime soon either. Florida State is in position to dominate the state of Florida for at least four more years, which, by the way, is a good reason why I kept telling people Jimbo Fisher was not going anywhere. He was not leaving for LSU. He was not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere else. Because if you are in the position that Florida State's in to be able to dominate the state of Florida recruiting-wise and on the field for the foreseeable future, it's really difficult to have a worse situation. It's difficult to have a better situation from which you can win titles and create a legacy. And sure enough, Fisher just signed an extended contract that could keep him at Florida State through 2026. Now, he's not going to see the end of that contract. That's going to be renegotiated at different points, and there will be different things that will be added on at different points. But he just signed a contract through 2024 with the possibility of, with two more 9-win seasons, which is almost certainly going to happen. I mean, if it doesn't, then something seriously went wrong. But two more 9-win seasons, and that extends the contract to 2026. So, I mean, the guy, it's pretty clear the guy is planning to be at Florida State for the long haul, which is very fortunate for Florida State fans. And one of the reasons that he wants to be at Florida State for the long haul is he has this program in a position to dominate the state of Florida for the foreseeable future. You know, when Florida hired Jim McElwain, the one thing that you need as a new head coach is you need to be able to show that you can at least compete with your rivals. You were brought in because the other guy was fired because that you weren't competing at that level, and then you've got to be able to create some excitement and show that you can compete. And Florida State, the first 2 years of McElwain's tenure, has definitely made it clear that there's not a whole lot of competition between those two teams. And Florida State, I mean, despite Francois being up and down in this one, and the one throw in particular just being completely puzzling, I still don't know what he was looking at. Florida State dominated up front on both sides of the football. And, you know, it's not that surprising that the Florida State defensive line dominated the Florida offensive line. But aside from having some trouble with Caleb Brantley, who's really an excellent player on the defensive line, the Florida State offensive line dominated the Florida defensive front, which is a good defensive front. Now, they were banged up. They were down a couple players. But still, that's not necessarily what a lot of people might have expected coming into that game. And then, of course, Dalvin Cook is Dalvin Cook. And beyond that, Florida State's defense finishing the regular season with a terrific performance, once again, against a toothless Gator offense, obviously. But still, whenever you hold a team to 3.2 yards per play, and that's an FBS team, you did something right. And when you're able to hold that team to 2.43 yards per play in non-garbage time, that's even better. And then if you subtract the first scripted drive that Florida had, so they had almost their entire offensive output on their first drive outside of garbage time. If you can eliminate the first and the last drives of this game, Florida averaged 1.65 yards per play. Now, I know that Jim McElwain said when he first took over the job at Florida that, you know, a dog could run his offense. He could have a good offense with a dog at quarterback. Well, I actually think it might be a good idea for McElwain to try that, given the results that they just had. I'm not sure that they would do worse with a dog at quarterback than 1.65 yards per play. Yowza. And what a difference getting healthy on the defensive line made for Florida State late in the year. I mean, Naughty was absolutely dominant in the second half of the season. Sweat really came along as well once he got healthy. And, you know, obviously with some of the other players starting to really find their groove with Christmas and Brian Burns and you know, DeMarcus Walker cementing his place as one of the better defensive linemen in Florida State school history. This defensive line, this defensive front really came into its own late in the year, and that changed the defense. And, you know, they did not give up a third down conversion. I know this has been discussed quite a bit, previously outside of this podcast. Didn't give up a third down conversion in this game. The last time that happened was the Rooster game in 1998. So, I mean, it's just a thorough domination aside from Florida State's special teams. With the fumble, with Nooney Murray having the fumble on the punt return in the fourth quarter. Remarkable how Florida State's special teams and offense have been in such a giving mood against Florida in the last couple of years, in the fourth quarter, last 4 years, really, aside from that 2014 game. It just cannot get a shutout against the Gators. Cannot keep from giving up that offensive or special teams score, you know, because of some fumble or some fluke play. That said, I think it's who out there would have guessed, or who out there would have just figured, you know, just off the cuff, that the Charles Kelly led Florida State defense would have done better against Clemson and against Florida the last 2 years than Alabama's defense did. Go figure that one out. Wow. Yeah, well, I mean, and the real question is how much better the Florida State defense got versus the quality of the offenses they played getting significantly worse. And I think the latter part is a big piece of this. But at the same time, there is an aspect of guys actually recognizing their reading their keys, being in proper position, having good run fits, good technique, good communication. Florida State actually played a proper banjo technique in the red zone against Florida on that first drive. There were some things that really seemed to get fixed late in the year as the defense started to come around, such that I think even against better competition offensively, you've got to think that the defense would look better. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do moving forward. But I do think that the Florida State defense did get significantly better over the course of the season Now, I don't want to spend too much time on the Florida game, obviously, because it's already starting to fade into the distant past. I've already talked about the Fisher contract being agreed to. One other thing, though, that contract brings up is that contract only further establishes that not only is Fisher planned to be at Florida State for the long haul and that he's planning for the long haul at Florida State, but he also effectively, by the way that they structured his buyout, incentivized FSU and the boosters to pony up more money for assistant coaches. Fisher didn't get a significant raise in this contract. He wasn't after more money for himself so much as he was for security and being able to run the program the way that he wants and to get more money and more positions in the support staff to be able to support the excellence that he wants in the program. And the structure of his buyout, where his buyout would be the sum total of the contracts remaining for his assistants and support staff and such, if he chooses to leave, that would be the buyout that incentivizes Florida State to have sizable and multi-year assistant coach salaries. So that allows the assistant coaches to come in, allows Florida State to target better assistant coaches on the market and to give them multi-year contracts, which didn't used to be done, but this is becoming more of a trend in college football. Head coaching salaries are starting to stabilize a little bit more, but the arms race has now moved to assistant coaching salaries and specifically longer contracts on those salaries. And so that allows, again, more of a long-term sort of focus to bring in the guys necessary to keep the program momentum moving forward rather than backwards. And this, again, brings up something that Fisher is really big on, and that is Fisher has always, from the time he took over at Florida State, and really before that, I mean, I used to spend a lot more time getting a chance to talk to Fisher when he was head coach in waiting, when he was an offensive coordinator, about his philosophy, about the ways that he actually thought about running a program and those things. And one of the things that Fisher really emphasized and that he's really big on is long-term process-oriented thinking. And this is very much obviously borrowed from Nick Saban, who obviously is Fisher's prime mentor in this regard. Saban is more, you know, he defines process-oriented thinking over, you know, fluky results. He doesn't care. Saban, over and over and over again, talks about how focusing on wins and losses and outcomes and outcome-oriented thinking is the wrong way to go. That you have to focus on process and the why you get to specific results in order to have sustained success. I mean, you think about it as if you want to train a player to shoot like Steph Curry, if you're trying to train a kid to shoot like Steph Curry, you don't just tell the kid to go out and shoot it however is going to put the ball in the hoop from a young age. No, you try to make sure that the fundamentals are correct, even if early on the kid can't hit as many shots like that because he's not strong enough or whatever. Because once the kid gets stronger, once things develop, then the fundamentals end up taking over and the long-term results are better. Same thing with the golf swing or whatever. You might be able to hit a few shots really well with bad technique, but if you have a bad swing, eventually bad results are going to come out of it. So what you've got to do is the constant effort is to polish and get things to be as fundamentally sound as possible so that eventually the results follow from having the proper approach, the proper process. And this is the way that he's run this program from the time he took over, is thinking about things not just for this year or next year or the year following, but for 4 or 5 years down the line. Where's the game going? What's going to happen? What changes do we need to make? What fundamentals need to be instilled? What culture needs to be built into the program to be successful? And that actually, to some degree, accounts for some of the fan frustration with things like older wide receivers playing over younger, more physically talented wide receivers, for example. Fisher and Saban and these guys emphasize a play when you've earned it, not just because you're talented mentality. And that's the difference between cutting corners for maybe an extra play to be made here or there versus a program culture that after eventually this becomes the way that things are done in the program, everybody walks that line, and eventually the younger guys do get on the field and they do make those plays, but they do it while still actually fitting into the culture that you're trying to build into the program for long-term success. And this isn't just a Saban thing, honestly. This is also really a Bobby Bowden thing. I mean, I remember when Bowden was coaching, and people used to complain about how, you know, Bowden only plays seniors and Bowden won't play the young talent and all this. And part of that is, again, it's selection bias by fans who... they remember the last really, really dynamic recruit and how highly regarded that guy was coming out of high school. And why aren't we playing the freshman? Well, you know, the junior was a 4-star recruit too, in many cases. Now, obviously not true in some of these cases. I mean, Bobo Wilson being a 3-star recruit and such, and he being one of the prime fan targets and such. But these guys, generally speaking, going back to the Bowden years as well, The older guy that's playing was a highly regarded recruit to be at Florida State as well. And he happens to be better because he's been in the program, he's older, and he's actually developed. And Bowden used to have a saying, potential means you ain't done nothing yet. And Fisher very much holds to that. He wants to see the potential put out there. He wants to see a guy, when the guy starts dominating in practice, when the guy starts showing that he's reliable and isn't going to cause turnovers on offense or isn't going to bust assignments on defense, then he's going to get that guy in the field as soon as possible. I mean, look at Derwin James and Brian Burns and Dalvin Cook and all these freshmen that played early. There's no qualms about playing freshman early. I mean, he tried to push Kelvin Benjamin out there really before he was ready, in many respects, to try to get him out there because he knew he was such a dynamic talent. But also requiring those guys to actually walk the line and do things right and get it right enough that they belong out there. It's the Saban way, and it's also, like I said, though less systematized, the Bowden way. And Fisher's long-term contract only reinforces that the reason that he's been taking this process-oriented, future-oriented approach from the beginning, and that's because he plans to leave a legacy at Florida State, which, again, if you're a Florida State fan, that's not a bad thing. All right, let's go ahead then and move into the third topic for the day, and that is the matchup against Michigan. When I saw this matchup hit, it was one of the first thoughts that I had was, wow, this is as good a matchup for Florida State as they could have asked for against another top team. Listen, Michigan is a good football team. At one point in the season, Michigan may have been the best team in the country. At one point, early-ish in the season, you know, when they rung up 78 when they beat Rutgers by 78, that may have been the best football team in the country. I think at that time in the season, Louisville and Michigan might have been the two best teams in the country. And obviously Alabama's probably belonging in that discussion as well. But at the same point, this is probably as good a matchup as Florida State could have asked for. Sometimes it's not about which team is better in terms of how they compare to, say, the other 10 teams in, you know, the top, or the other 9 teams in the top 10. So you might be a team that could go 8-1 on average against the rest of the top 10. But if you're playing that other one that matches up really well with you, that might actually be, it just might be that there might be a bad matchup, right? So you could be a heavy run team with great run stoppers on the other side, and then play a team that stops the run really well and throws it all over the yard. And that may just be a bad matchup for you. This is one where I think Florida State matches up really well with Michigan. Michigan this year runs offensively that pro style run heavy offense. And listen, nobody coaches that better. Their sort of power style, Nobody coaches that multi-formation, pro-style, power-oriented offense better than Harbaugh. It's as good as any in the country in terms of what he does design-wise. This is going to be a scheme junkie's dream of a matchup on both sides of the football because of all the formations and all of the little wrinkles that are going to be in there that won't necessarily be visible to everybody else, but they're going to be visible to those who are scheme junkies and to coaches. But Harbaugh does as well with that as anybody in the country, and Michigan has a quality offense. But Florida State this year, with Derwin James out, now with Ermin Lane, looks like the report just came out that he's also likely to be out for the Orange Bowl. With the issues in terms of injuries in the secondary and other issues, Florida State's best personnel this year is that 3-4-4-3 personnel, where they're able to put Jacob Pugh on the field as that third true linebacker, and go with the bigger front. That's their best 11. And this matchup against Michigan is going to allow Florida State to do that. And I think Michigan's going to have a really hard time running the football against Florida State's defensive front. And I'm not sure that they have the players to force FSU into nickel all that much. So, you know, and if I were Harbaugh, that's one of the things I'd really consider trying to do. But the thing is, that doesn't really help. That doesn't benefit Michigan's matchup because they want to have tight end Jake Butt on the field. They want to go heavier personnel on offense as well. So it's strength on strength with Michigan's offense against Florida State's defense. And the other thing is they don't have a quarterback like a Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson or whatever who gives you that additional threat with his legs. Spate is he's a quality quarterback, particularly now that he's likely to be healthy coming into the Orange Bowl. And I that's one of the things I'm really interested in seeing is how much of what was Michigan's late season slide, particularly on the offensive side, due to Wilton Spate's injuries. Will they be that much more dangerous in the passing game again once Spate gets healthy? And I do expect them to be better in the passing game than a lot of Florida State fans expect. But Spate is a statue who's not an elite thrower like many of the ones that Florida State went against this year. I mean, that's not Mitch Trubisky back there. That's not Deshaun Watson. That's not Kelly. He's not a quarterback on that level. So this is strength on strength, and Florida State happens to be facing an offense. I think this is about the seventh best offense that Florida State will have faced. I don't think they're going to be a team that's going to score 35, 40 points on Florida State. Just again, I think their offense is probably really comparable. The offense that I see there is I think they're really comparable with what Miami put on the field. I think they're very comparable to it's a Brad Kaya with, you know, some quality running backs. I mean, they go like eight deep with quality running backs. Jake Butt, a quality tight end, just like Njoku, Miami's tight end. Quality wide receivers on the outside, vertical receivers. They got one in particular, Darbo, who is probably their biggest threat to Florida State on the outside, similar to a Stacy Coley. I think they're very comparable offensively to Miami's offense. And I think Florida State will be able to take a similar approach against them to what they did against Miami. So then we go to the other side of the football. And again, this is only preliminary. I mean, I'm going to deal with this stuff a good bit more in more detailed stuff before the bowl game. But that's moving to the other side of the ball. Michigan has the best defense Florida State will play this year. It's a really, really good defense. And I think aside from Bama, the most complete and best defense in the country. They do not have a glaring weakness on their defense, and Don Brown, their defensive coordinator, is one of the best in the country, and he's a guy that's had his success against Jimbo Fisher in the past as well at Boston College. Now, there's some discussion that, well, you know, even at Boston College, he didn't have the talent on that roster that Michigan did, or that Michigan does. Actually, I'm not sure about that. I think those Boston College defenses that he had were pretty close to as talented as this Michigan defense that he's putting out there. I think there are a couple. I think Michigan's probably got a couple players in terms of experience, talent that are better than what they had at Boston College. I think Jordan Lewis on the outside, in particular, gives them the ability to cover. Do a little bit more in terms of coverage than what they could at Boston College, but they had some quality defensive backs at BC as well. But BC, in terms of linebackers and defensive line, very comparable to what Michigan is putting on the field now. Those Don Brown defenses, very comparable in that respect. But Brown will bring pressure, and he's going to bring it from all angles, and he's going to run blitz, and he's going to force you to throw the football and throw it into tight coverage, and that's going to be something. That's going to be a place where, given the way that DeAndre Francois has been so inconsistent at different points, and again, you got to wonder also how much with him getting healthier, Florida State's passing game improves. I mean, that's true for both sides here. You wonder how much that helps FSU. But Brown is going to bring a lot of different looks. He's going to twist and stunt up front. Going to try to get penetration and disrupt. In the backfield, I believe Michigan leads the nation in tackles for loss. They're second in sacks to Florida State. And obviously Florida State's offensive line has struggled giving up sacks on the year. But here's the thing. Florida State did manage to run it all over Clemson and Florida late in the year. And yes, Michigan's defense and particularly defensive front is better overall than either of those teams. But I do think the Florida State offensive line has continued to improve over the course of the season. And once they got Bell on the field after Dickerson's injury at offensive guard, I think you could see a real difference. I think they were significantly better with Bell on the field than they were with Dickerson, which, again, they were playing the younger guy there, especially once Florida State lost to North Carolina. They started playing the younger guy with more talent at that offensive guard spot. But I think there was maybe not quite the same degree of comfort on the right side of the offensive line. I think they gelled a little bit better once Bell got out there, and just the unit itself was a little bit more reliable with the more experienced veteran player who's just not as talented on the field late in the year. And they were able to run the football on some quality defenses late in the year. Including Boston College, which, you know, still runs a system similar to what Don Brown does, just this year, certainly not with the talent that that Michigan has. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what FSU is able to do in the running game against Michigan. My initial read on this is that I think FSU is going to be able to have some success running power and running counter against that Michigan defense, particularly when they run it at Peppers, who is undersized and on tape has shown some weakness. He's a bit of a weak point in that defense when you run straight at him. And it'll be interesting to see how FSU is able to do that at different points. The other interesting thing is, as good as Michigan's defense is, and they're ranked number one in the S&P Plus, which is opponent adjusted, they're ranked ahead of Bama there. That said, the best offenses that Michigan faced are Ohio State at 12, Penn State, the 29th best offense in the country, and they weren't even playing at that level when Michigan played them. And then Colorado, the 43rd best offense in the country, and Colorado had their backup quarterback for nearly that entire game. So they haven't really faced a quality offense aside from Ohio State, and Ohio State had really struggled in the weeks leading up to the Michigan game. So that's one of those things where, yes, the S&P Plus adjusts for opponent, but I wonder sometimes whether or not the opponent adjustment in the S&P Plus is strong enough. And the fact that Michigan's defense is ranked ahead of Bama's on there, I think, reinforces that. It's really good defense, but it's not as good as Alabama's. You just have to watch the two to know that. And I think some of that gets back to they played Penn State before they got hot. They played Ohio State after they cooled down. And they played Colorado with their backup quarterback. And you contrast that with, you know, with Florida State, for example. FSU played against Ole Miss with a healthy Kelly. They played against a fully healthy UNC with Mac Hollins, UNC's NFL draft pick as a deep threat, one of maybe the best deep threat in the country before he went out with injury. They played, and UNC was just a totally different team once he and a couple of their offensive linemen got hurt. Florida State played Louisville at their absolute peak. You know, they faced some quality offenses, and not just quality offenses at just the wrong time in the season. And so sometimes opponent adjustment doesn't even quite adjust enough. Even without the question of whether the math is enough, sometimes there are other factors in terms of injuries and when teams are peaking, when they're best and all that, that also can't really be taken into play by these metrics. It's actually remarkable when you look at the offenses that Florida State faced. They faced the number 2 offense, the number 3 offense, that's Louisville and USF, the number 11 offense, Clemson, the number 20 offense, Ole Miss, the number 23 offense, UNC, and that's after that game in the hurricane that dropped UNC almost 10 spots. And then Miami, number 36. Wow. And just for the record, Michigan is right in the same range as Miami there. And again, I think stylistically, they're very similar to Miami. Now, on the contrary, the best defenses that Michigan faced, they played a really, really good slate of defenses. Number 3, Ohio State. Number 5, Wisconsin. Number 11, Colorado. Number 12, Iowa. Number 16, Penn State. And number 30, Indiana. So that's a really, really good slate of defenses, whereas FSU played number 6, Clemson. Number 8, Florida. Number 14, Miami. 15, Louisville. 17, NCSU. 21, BC. And 28, Wake. So a good slate of defenses, but certainly nobody as good as Michigan. Now, I think really there are a couple factors in this game that are going to determine it. We'll talk more about that as we get into the remainder of the bowl season. As I get to break this matchup down a little bit, but I do think FSU is going to have to throw a good bit on first down. That's when Michigan will not be able to apply as much pressure. And there will be some opportunities, I think. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how Michigan's defensive backs, particularly Jordan Lewis, handle a guy like Auden Tate, who's 6'5", and maybe not the best matchup for a smaller corner like Jordan Lewis, who's as good a corner as there is in the country, but maybe not the best matchup once again. It'll be interesting. Like I said, I think this is a fascinating game. Tons more to deal with. I'm actually going to break this current recording, for what it's worth, into two podcasts. I'm going to release one on Wednesday, and then the other in a couple days on Thursday or Friday. The other podcast is going to be a recruiting and frequently asked recruiting and a questions podcast, addressing some questions that some of the fans have. From Twitter and Facebook and such. I'm going to go ahead and record those at the same time here, but I'm going to go ahead and split these podcasts because this one's already getting up to around the time that I want for a standard podcast. One last thing, by the way, it does look like Urban Lane is going to miss the Orange Bowl with a foot injury, which is really too bad because, he'd settled in at that safety position. I do think that's a big deal for this matchup because of his physicality at that position. Michigan doesn't spread you out and tend to get a bunch of free verticals and things like that you have to worry about, which makes this really even more of an ideal scenario for a physical guy like Lane to be able to come up and help and run support and all those things. And frankly, Florida State's other options at the safety position are just nowhere near as good in that department as Lane, even though he just moved to that position. So that's a big loss for Florida State. I think that's gonna be something that's gonna hurt pretty significantly. We'll see how big an impact that has, but I do think it's gonna be a factor that makes Trey Marshall that much more important for Florida State. So they better make sure they don't lose him either to injury or to targeting at any point in that game. But in any case, I'm going to go ahead and cut the episode here. That'll do it for us here on the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a VSporto channel. Be right back with you in another day or so with the second half of this podcast, where we'll address recruiting and some questions from the listeners. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Thanks for listening.
I made this.